But first this morning, we're going to look at driving for older people. Now, how are you going to find out that you shouldn't be driving anymore? Because if you're a driver, that day may well come. A day when you decide, or someone else decides for you, that it's no longer safe for you to be on the roads. Now, what a blow this would be. What a loss of freedom, and what an impact on life. Everything you do, all your routines just thrown to the wind. I'm sure that would be a devastating day. But what about the other side? You know that your mum or your dad or maybe your loved partner really shouldn't be on the road, and that their reflexes aren't up to it, that they're getting distracted easily. How do you know when you can't let things go on anymore, that it's just too dangerous for the person you love and for everyone else? It's a tricky, tricky moment, and one that more and more of us are going to face. One in 10 people in Australia over 65 have some form of dementia, and that rises to 3 in 10 for over 85s. The person who's been researching this very closely is about to join us. His name is Joe Ibrahim, and he's from Monash University. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks, Cathy.
Now, tell us, this is a field of research for you. What are the growth areas in this as an issue? Is it that there are just more people on the road? We're living longer? What is it?
I think the issue is the greater level of independence we all want as we get older, and the old rules of stopping driving when someone tells you to for no particular reason, I think, is long gone. We also have a growing older population and more people with dementia, and our understanding of dementia and what people can do with dementia has to change to be more realistic. And by that, I mean that people with dementia can do far more than people give them credit for.
Yes, well, that's an interesting line, isn't it? And very hard to determine, I suppose. What do you mean when you say dementia? I mean, over 65, 1 in 10, and I know that there's, well, nearly 25,000 people under the age of 65, right down to 30, who have younger onset dementia. But what's in the basic function of every day that you're talking about, and how much, and when does it reach that point where they shouldn't be on the road?
So dementia is a very broad term describing a number of different diseases that affect a person's brain and affects their thinking. So dementia usually means that a person has an impairment in either their ability to make decisions, their memory, aspects to do with their speech or planning, how they cope with changed situations. So it's a combination of things. Medically, the challenge for us in trying to work out whether someone can or can't continue driving is still a very blurry area. People with very early onset usually have no problems at all, and people with very severe dementia that struggle to look after themselves at home obviously can't drive. It's that very middle grey zone where someone is slowly deteriorating from year to year, and trying to get a sense of when they ought to stop or whether they should continue. We don't have very good or reliable tests for that.
Yeah, that's the real tricky area, and one I imagine that you have to negotiate a fair bit. Now, we're interested to hear from you. We're talking on Life Matters with Professor Joseph Ibrahim. He's the head of law, health law and ageing at the Department of Forensic Medicine at Monash University. But have you had this conversation recently? Have you had to tell somebody that you think, well, it's time, and what have you done? How have you gone about it? Have you enlisted the help of a GP? Have you mounted arguments? Have you sort of called used the moral argument that you wouldn't want to hurt anybody else? What have you had to do, and how's it been received? Have you got any advice for people who might be facing that similar situation? 1300 225 576, 1300 call RN. Of course, if you're in South Australia or the Northern Territory, you can ring our listener line 0283 1430, and also in Western Australia 0283 1430, and leave your thoughts there. But if you want to give us a call now, 1300 225 576. So, Joseph, what is the most common course towards somebody relinquishing or having their licence taken away from them?
Well, it can happen in usually one of two ways. You plan for it knowing that as you get older and people voluntarily give up driving, and usually they've planned ahead in terms of how they're going to get around, how they're going to keep engaged in the community. And then there's another group that I guess, like all of us, we hold on to what we've got until someone taps us on the shoulder and points out that there's a problem. And I think in the latter situation, if you wait till there's a problem, it is very worrying both for the person, their family and the community. What we were arguing, continue to argue, is that people are being unnecessarily asked to relinquish their driver's license when they're still capable, and that we need to be far more tolerant and understanding about the impact on the person who's been forced to stop driving.
Mm. Tell us about those impacts.
Well, I think it's particularly an issue in regional and country areas where you can't get around with public transport. And so if your next neighbour is over a kilometre away, not being able to drive severely impacts on your life. We know that people that have been forced to stop driving, their social circle or their world shrinks far more. They're more likely to get depressed, less likely to engage in maintaining their overall function. It also creates pressure on families. And so people that have given up driving are sitting at home alone, tend to more likely end up needing more care.
Mm.
And so that's not really a future any of us want to promote. And it's a future that awaits all of us. We're not going to be 20, 30, 50 or 60 for the rest of our lives. All of us are going to get older.
Wow. I want to hear more about that idea that you think that there are some forms of dementia that you can still drive safely. But first, let's hear from Pip. Pip's joining us from Townsville. Good morning, Pip.
Good morning.
What about your situation? You've got your mum and her driving.
My mum.
Tell us more.
Your guest has hit the nail on the head. I pretty much think he's covered everything I was going to say, but my mum's 88 and this year had her very first car accident. Mercifully, she and the other driver walked away, but she was in a big city and she drives in there like once a month, but she lives in a small village and is a farmer's wife. And the thought of her not having a vehicle was just, she wouldn't even hear of it. She wouldn't even let us tell the GP she'd had this accident because she was frightened he would take her license away from her. I think it was a reflex thing. Her responses have slowed down because she's really super safe in the car. But we've come to a compromise, and she's now promised us she won't drive in the big city. She'll only drive locally in the village and up to my brother's farm, and just the familiar territory.
Mm, that's a good compromise, and you feel safe about that?
Well, we're still nervous. She wrote her car off like it was a major event. Mm. Mercifully, there was no injuries to her. I don't know how that happened. She wouldn't even go and get assessed. She's just a stubborn old thing. and she's right as rain. She's got herself a brand new Swift and away she goes again. But she will stay within the confines. But she would just be dead without her car. She just wouldn't cope at all.
Yeah, wow. That's really, you've set the dilemma out for us very clearly there. Thank you for that, Pip. That is a really concerning point, isn't it, Joseph, that the older person is going to conceal what they're experiencing from their GP because they know there is this risk they may have their license taken away.
That's true, and I think Pip really highlighted that very clearly, is that older people are not attending general practitioners or their doctor for fear that their ability to live their life will be stripped away from them. It's obviously not what GPs want to do, but we live in a time where of fear about what could or couldn't happen because we haven't had the open discussions, or we don't have a community or society that's supportive of older people maintaining their independence. One of the challenges for GPs when we have the conversations about driving is they've reported that it can unsettle their relationship with patients, and they would prefer Some of them would prefer a system where it's the specialist that's talking to the person with dementia about driving.
Yes.
Others argue that that sort of sensitive discussion is far better had with your usual doctor, has a better understanding of you.
Yeah, I can see that both would be, well, attractive. Let's hear from Mary in Sydney. You're on the other side of this, Mary. You're 85.
That's right.
And you gave up driving?
Yes, I gave up driving in my late 70s because I was aware of the fact that, for example, I had I couldn't as quickly sort of turn my head to the side or over my shoulder to look to the side or behind me or anything of that kind. And also because when I was driving with friends who were a similar age, I frequently felt quite nervous. And obviously, to anybody who's got any sense of responsibility at all, you can't take risks because you're taking risks with other people's lives too. I'm astonished to hear you talking about dementia as the main thing, which is the problem. I think to begin with, if you change the name of dementia to something else, it would be helpful because it brings up visions of somebody who's gaga and totally incapable of doing anything rational, and that's not going to help any conversation about anything as far as I'm concerned.
Spot on. I think you're right. And your point about feeling just that physical immobility being what was the trigger point for you. Thank you for making both that decision, Mary. It was very admirable of you, but also for making that point. Joseph, what do you say to that about the stigma of dementia?
Well, I think Mary highlights the common view of what people think dementia is, and that's not at all true. So everyone will know, I think, someone with dementia, and they might not actually know that they have got dementia. So a lot of people with early onset or early diagnosis continue on with their lives without much noticeable effect. What we tend to do as humans is we pick the worst case scenario and say, I never want to end up without, as Mary said, gaga, which isn't an apt description for people with dementia. It describes a very narrow end of a very severe part of the disease. And what we were arguing and continue to argue is that people with mild forms of dementia should be able to continue to live their lives in the same way that everyone else with any sort of disease is assessed based on their function, not based on the label. We think people are assuming that if you have dementia, your brain just sort of switches off and it no longer functions, which isn't at all true.
Yeah, so there's a branding problem in this issue as well. On Life Matters, we're talking with Joseph Ibrahim, who's from Monash University School of Forensic Medicine and Health Law, about when that point comes when somebody shouldn't be on the road anymore. And we're taking your calls, 1300 225 576. We're going to get to Central Queensland and Gillian in a moment and a few other people who are waiting to have a chat. But also we want to hear from Connie and Brian, who are in the ACT. And Connie is Brian's full-time carer. She used to be a registered nurse, but she retired when Brian was diagnosed with, well, an earlier onset Alzheimer's disease. Good morning. Welcome to you both.
Good morning, Cathy.
Good morning. Hello.
Hello. Now tell us, Connie, first maybe you could tell us about when you began to realise that Brian had slightly changed.
Well, we were on holidays overseas and he wasn't coping very well with money and getting around. I thought it was just a language barrier. When we came back to Australia, he had a bit of trouble settling back into work. They'd changed a few ways that they did things at work, and a lot more of it was on the computer, and he had trouble keeping up. But he also found he had trouble with numbers. We were playing cards with my mum and he couldn't count up the numbers to work out what his score was at the end of the game. And a few times he had problems with money, just working out money. And sometimes during a conversation he'd just stop and couldn't find the right word and couldn't explain himself or tell me how he was feeling. And I thought, I don't know what's going on. Maybe we should go and see a doctor. Mm. I was thinking, he's still suffering from jet lag and his diabetes hasn't helped and maybe he's a bit depressed with all the trouble he's having at work. Anyway, the doctor said, we need to see a geriatrician. Took a few months to get off to see her. He sort of continued getting a little bit worse with his numbers and his words. And she did a mini mental on us and straight away said, oh, he's got Alzheimer's. We'll need to do an MRI to have a good look at his brain.
Wow, so that was just a year ago or so now. Brian, does Connie's account of things chime for you? Is that how you felt?
Yep. Yeah, he's nodding. But
oh, he's nodding.
You got to speak, Dale.
So yeah. That must have been frustrating for you, particularly at work, Brian.
Oh, yes, because being a person that was up at 4 o'clock in the morning because I was in the hospital working there as the first person in the hospital in the morning. So, it was a little bit daunting to sort of just not be able to do anything.
Mm, yeah, going from having a full and active life, and I know you've got, beautiful, four beautiful sons and grandchildren and everything. Now, what about your driving? Are you still on the road?
Absolutely, yes. Here in the ACT, we're very fortunate. We've got great people here that do assessment for us. I've only just done the assessment last week again. Every 6 months I have to go for a driving assessment. Now, these guys are absolutely brilliant. They put you at ease, and there's two people in the car. One sits in the front, and he tells me where to go and do that sort of thing. And the other lady, Tegan, she does the assessment, sits quietly in the background, and so we jump in the car and away we go, and he'll tell me and go to somewhere or some area, and then I'll have to go and park the car and then reverse the car and then go somewhere else.
Mm. So quite a rigorous test they put you through.
Oh, it's not too bad, really, when you sort of you get over the first little bit of it. It's quite okay. I mean, it has to be done, and they put you nice and easily, and I had to do a few other little brain teasers as to whether or not I knew the road rules and mm-hmm. those sort of things. So,
and Connie, what do you think? Do you think when the moment comes where Brian doesn't pass this test, do you think he's going to cop it sweet, or is it going to go down with a battle?
Well, he rarely drives on his own anyway. We're usually together. If it's at night time, I always drive. At this stage, I'd say he's going to just cop it sweet and say, okay, no worries. But because of the nature of the disease, he may be resistant when the time does come. Mm. But the first time he did his test 6 months ago, he was really nervous about it. And my son has a friend who's a driving instructor, so he took him out for a driving lesson just to make sure that everything was being done right beforehand. And we thought that was a really good idea. And they do take you out in your own car, which is another good thing. And they come to your home, do a mini mental, have a chat to you and everything, go through all the paperwork, and then take you out in your own car. So, it is quite a comfortable way to do it. They're not expecting you to jump into a strange car or anything.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's really probably very heartwarming for people who are anticipating having that test. Hey, Brian, I think you're on a winner there with Connie. I think, hang on to her. Thank you both for talking with us and explaining part of the actual real experience of it. It's great to talk to you.
Okay, thank you.
On Life Matters, we are talking about this issue, which is very delicate, I imagine, in many families. Let's head to Central Queensland and say good day to Gillian. Gillian, you've got your mum off the road.
Yes, I did. She emigrated from England when she was 85. walked into the local court office and just immediately got a Queensland driving licence. She drove for a few years, but then we realised she really wasn't capable, you know, her reactions weren't up to it. But she wouldn't have a bar of it, so I actually talked to the doctor, because every year she had to go in and get a medical certificate, and you're supposed to carry that with you. So after talking to the doctor, we went for the appointment, and she did a few little things and said, I don't think you're up to it. My mother was mortified, and actually there was a student doctor in the room as well, which I thought was very good for that student doctor to see. This is another part of being a doctor. And her license was taken off her. But when she got back to the retirement village where she lived, everyone said, oh, just go to another doctor.
Oh, really? Shopping around. Oh,
so,
dear.
Okay. And I do believe that these driving requirements are different in each state. In New South Wales, you actually have to take a test. I don't think in Queensland you do. You just go to your doctor, get an eye test, tell him you're fine, and they tick the box and away you go.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I know that the variation between the states and territories are really quite, there's so many of them in all the different roads and traffic rules. Thanks for that, Gillian. On to John, who's also in Queensland. Now, John, you reckon that older drivers are often better drivers?
Yeah, well, I think that conceivably we'd have to put a lot down to experience. And, you have the scenario whereby if older people have an accident, say, there's a lot made of it, and, you know, there's probably dozens of young ones have a similar accident and not so much is made of it. I think we have to overlook it. I mean, where Professor Joseph said that dementia is not necessarily what we think it is, I think that we have a point there, because recently, as we all know, it's been found that people in these situations react to music, which is a long time thing in their history. And I think that driving also would be, by and large, a long time thing in their history.
Oh, right. I see what you're saying, that it's just a sort of mechanical memory, and that it's an unconscious thing you do very well. Thanks for that. I'll put it to Professor Joe. Joseph, what do you think of that point?
Well, I think it's right that some of the skills that you learn or have had lifelong, you can persist with you when you have dementia. And so it's not... it's not as dramatic if you've got a long history. I think if you're trying to learn driving when you're diagnosed with dementia, it's a whole different skill set. But if you've been driving, and often by the time you're diagnosed with dementia, most people have been driving for 40 or 50 years. And so if they're in a familiar car driving a familiar route, then it does become automatic. And I'd guess almost every one of your listeners would have had that experience that they've left home and got to where they went without even knowing how they got there.
That is amazing, isn't it? But at the same time, you know, our roads are getting busier and there's more going on. You've got to, particularly in the big cities, can be quite aggressive out there. It can be a young person's game sometimes on the road. Joseph, thank you for elucidating both sides of this, because I think, you know, there are some very real consequences for people who don't have a licence anymore, and obviously there'll be people listening to us talking now who have lost loved ones because of an older driver who shouldn't have been on the road. So it's a line that we're all going to have to, as you say, face eventually if we drive. So, yeah, thank you.
Norris, Cathy, thank you. Bye-bye.
And thank you to everyone who called as well. We've still got a full board of calls of people who wanted to get their thoughts in. Thank you for that. But if you want to leave a message for us on the listener line, 02-833-1430, tell us what your experience has been and how you negotiated it with an older person in your life. My name's Cassie McCullough. This is Life Matters. And coming up, Noni Hazelhurst, Logie's Hall of Famer.
Want to hear about the best party in town this election season? It's a new podcast with me, Frank Kelly.
And me, Patricia Carvelis.
The Party Room, your essential guide to this federal election. Subscribe now. Simply search for The Party Room in your podcast app.
Or listen via the RN website, abc.net.au/RN.